1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, Justin Fields and Tevin Jenkins are hurt. What does that mean for the Bears? We'll talk about it in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Mark Schanowski, Bulls insider at Stadium and a sports reporter for ABC7. We talk with him about some Bulls basketball, what to expect for next year, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. No games with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. If you have insurance needs and you haven't called them yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find them online at ryanismyagent.com. That's ryanismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Not usually a panicker. Try to stay calm no matter the situation. Roll with the flow, and deal with it. I know people who panic all the time, and they only get stressed, more worried, more concerned, or sick. Actually sick, physically. It's not a good thing to do, so I try to block it all out. Might be tough at times, but I do my best to stay sane and stay calm. You know, that rule might go out the window here. I know the season hasn't started yet. There's a long way to go. We don't know what to expect from this Bears team. That's a fact. I mean, we could sit here and prognosticate and predict. But at the end of the day, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if they're going to beat the Packers, if they're going to beat the Rams, who's going to start, what the O-line's going to look like. We don't know any of this. These are all just predictions and analysis based on articles and based on camp. So I want to preface this with that statement. But I am very concerned and even a bit worried about this Bears team. It's crazy how quickly things could change in a day. I mean, you watched my video yesterday. We talked about Justin Fields. We talked about the O-line. And yes, I was concerned, but not like I am today. Matt Nagy had a press conference, and I'll read you some quotes from it via Dan Wiederer. Quote, Tevin Jenkins is having surgery today on his back. No timeline for Jenkins' return, but there's an internal hope that this is not season-ending, even though Adam Schefter said it could be. Justin Fields has groin soreness. He will not practice today. Nagy stressed that this is super conservative with the goal to make sure he could play on Saturday. Eddie Goldman is now down with a back issue. Cole Kmet has some minor hamstring tightness. And Jason Peters is not yet ready to come to the team as he continues through COVID-19 testing procedures. I told you, I'll try not to panic. But that was a lot. I'm just being honest. That is a lot to deal with and a lot to take in all in one day. So So we go from, oh no, the O-line might be an issue, to Tevin Jenkins out for a while. Peters, still not on the team. Oh yeah, and QB1, quote-unquote, Justin Fields, has groin soreness. Yeah, I don't feel too good. And I don't think anybody could blame me here. And Andy Dalton came out today and said, this is still my team. Matt Nagy even praised him and said, this is a tough situation. I appreciate Andy putting in his effort. You know, I'm having deja vu. This feels like last year. Mitch and Nick and the whole quarterback situation, people injured, all this stuff happening before the season begins. It's a lot to cover. Let me start with Tevin Jenkins. We'll go down the line here. I'm not going to say Tevin Jenkins is definitely Chris Williams or definitely Kevin White. But I will say this. He hasn't practiced yet. He's unable to suit up. Now he's getting surgery. Not good. And everybody could say, well, you're reacting too soon. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm being a bit too harsh, but when you trade up in the second round to get Jenkins, who was supposed to go at number 20, I have an issue. And I liked Jenkins, but I didn't know he had a back problem. The Bears did. They still drafted him. We all remember Kevin White, right? Just to make sure. You know, he's still in the NFL, just signed a deal with the Saints. But we all remember what happened there. First-round pick, highly touted, big wide receiver, and can't play. Injury. And everyone says it wasn't really a bust, he was hurt. No, 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 he's a bust. The Bears should have known or should have at least had an idea that this guy wasn't healthy and wouldn't get the job done. Not going to say Jenkins is a bust yet, hasn't even played, but I don't like this development. Nobody should be happy about this, and no one is. I'm more concerned and actually more mad about the fact that he was drafted with this knowledge already out there. Oh, he has a back problem. Let's take him anyway. What? Why was that decision made? I mean, maybe they thought it wouldn't be as severe, but in any case, shouldn't you do your research? Shouldn't you know? Well, this is a bit concerning. I don't know the full story. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. But from an outside perspective, looking in, I have no clue why he was drafted. Why are you going to draft somebody who's already hurt? We knew he had a back problem. Why'd you take him? This, Stu, is an example of Bears fandom going too far. When he was drafted, I saw so many hype videos. I saw the video that went viral of him pushing that defender out of bounds. That's great. That's great stuff. But you know what? Does nobody any good when you can't even play. When you're hurt, when you need surgery, doesn't matter. And I see those same people who promoted the video defending him saying, oh, this isn't Chris Williams, this isn't Kevin White. How the hell do you know? You're just worried about your hype video, and that's fine. I get he's a talented player, but it means nothing, absolutely nothing, if you're hurt. If you can't practice, if you're unable to perform, it means nothing. College highlights, cool hype videos, none of that means a thing if you can't get on the field and stay on the field. So once again, I hope Bears fans realize, stop overreacting. Wow, we got this great old lineman. Okay. Is he healthy? I'm sure Chris Williams looked amazing in college. Guess what? Couldn't play and was hurt. Whole career. I'm sure Kevin White looked amazing. Couldn't play, hurt all the time, bouncing around on practice squads. Stop overreacting. And that video went viral. I can't stop thinking about it because that night I remember everybody making hype videos, everybody saying this guy's an animal, he's going to be great. Can't play now. Hurt. We can't be crowning people Hall of Famers when they haven't even played yet. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like Bears fans love to do it more than other people. Crowning people Hall of Famers when they haven't played. I don't get that. And that's a new thing, too, because no one crowned Mitch a Hall of Famer in 2017. We're sitting here crowning Jenkins, Fields, Daz Newsome, all these people Hall of Famers, and they haven't played yet. Fine to see potential. It's fine to be excited about somebody, but everybody was saying Tevin Jenkins would be this Hall of Fame offensive lineman. The guy can't even play now. And who knows if he'll come back? Seriously, we don't know. Gotta hope he does, but if he doesn't, that's a big disappointment and a big blow to the offensive line. And as I said yesterday, and I'll continue to say this, don't put in Fields with no O-line. I'm serious. There is no reason, no benefit to put him in on everyone's hurt. No, wait a minute. Your favorite reporter is going to say it'll test him. It'll make him tough. Right. It'll make him tough to be sacked 40 times in a season, have 20 concussions, and be out of the game. Nobody understands that. Now he has groin soreness, too. That's not good. Now, it could be a day-to-day thing, but hey, they said Tevin Jenkins would be day-to-day. Now he's getting season-ending surgery, possibly. So, you really don't know what the truth is on Fields. I would hope he'd be okay. I don't know how he got the injury, but that's certainly not good news. Eddie Goldman is out. Cole Kmet is hurt. Peters, not back. I mean, I'm surprised at all these injuries. We're only in training camp. The season hasn't even begun yet. And you're losing key players at this point. That's why I said from the beginning. Unless this team is fully healthy, and unless Justin Fields is ready, skill-wise, there's no point in putting him in. There really isn't. I mean, why? For what reason? What benefit will you have to put him in with an O-line that's in shambles? With a 39-year-old just signed to try and replace Charles Leno and Tevin Jenkins. I mean, come on. And I know Peters is great, but I don't expect anything out of him. He's 39. 39-year-olds do not function, usually, in the NFL. If I'm wrong, I'll eat my words. See how it's so funny? Everybody clamored for a quarterback. They got one, and rightfully so, they needed one. But nobody thought about the other parts of the team. The unintended consequences. Nobody thought, oh, wait a minute, who's going to protect him? Nobody thought from last year, oh, maybe if they had a better offensive line, Foles and Mitch would have both done better. O-line's going to be an issue. Defense aging going to be an issue. Now Cole Kmet's here. Tight end spot going to be an issue. Remember, Justin Fields won't succeed if you give him nothing to work with. Not having Tevin Jenkins going to be a problem. Cole Kmet being hurt going to be a problem. A depleted O-line across the board going to be a problem. I'm really going to put my foot down here, and I don't care. He should not start. He should not play. Protect your quarterback. I mean, we all know, we're not stupid. We know the importance of the quarterback position today. We do. That's why teams trade up for him. That's why they trade for him. That's why they bend over backwards for that specific position. And the Bears are sitting here, not really prioritizing it. I believe that. The Bears are not prioritizing the quarterback position. I'll say it. No one else will. I'll say it. If they were, they'd surround Fields with good enough talent. They'd surround him with a good old line for protection. Maybe a better wide receiver here and there. Now commits her. So, no number one tight end. Say what you want about Jimmy Graham. He's old, and his performance is going to regress, plain and simple. If you were in Justin Fields' position, do you think you'd succeed? Never mind how athletic he is, how much he could run. I'm just talking about a pure X's and O's here. If you're given that O-line on paper, depleted and hurt, given a tight end that's hurt, how well do you think you're going to do? See, to me, The definition of prioritizing the quarterback position doesn't just mean drafting a good quarterback or signing a good quarterback, training for one. No, it means surrounding him with the right pieces to make sure he can at least somewhat succeed. At least give the guy something to work with. To their credit, they've done a great job with the run game, okay job with receivers, but none of that matters if you have a second to throw the football. The Bears need to prioritize the quarterback position. And so far, say what you want, they haven't. You could say they have, oh, hey, Ryan Pace, thanks for drafting Fields. How about Ryan Pace, thank you for giving him nothing on the offensive line. Remember all the apology letters people wrote to Pace? How are those looking right now? A great quarterback means nothing if you give him zero help on the offensive line. Tom Brady gets 5 or 6 seconds to throw the football. All of his reads done. He has so much time to stay composed to make a strong throw. And I know the skill level's different, but Mitch and Nick last year, no time to throw, both of them. That happens to Fields. Who knows what could happen? When Aaron Donald's bearing down on you, week one, and your top O-line guys are out, and you have a makeshift O-line, how do you think that's going to go, that whole game? Not good. Just very concerning, this whole situation. I told you to start. I'm not a panicker. I don't really panic or get scared or get stressed. I try to stay calm and sane and, you know, okay. But I have to say, this is not good. This whole situation, not good for the Bears. And it's a shame, too, because to their credit, I'll give them credit, they had an okay offseason. They really did. I mean, on paper, you draft Jenkins, you draft Fields, you have Dalton in, you can make a seamless transition at quarterback, you have a good run game. This could have been an 8-9 team, fully healthy, 9-8. And the next year, when Fields is the number one, you win. Good strategy to me. But now all these injuries have hit, and that whole status is up in the air. Bears fans, I just advise you to please understand that even though you think the Bears have prioritized quarterback, they haven't. That should be your number one takeaway from all this news. You could say they drafted Fields, brought in a real good quarterback finally, had a good draft, moved up, but it means absolutely nothing if you have no O-line to protect him, if you have no weapons around him, or not enough weapons. That should be the main takeaway from this. The Bears have not prioritized quarterback. You could say they have. You could fool yourself into thinking so because of the draft and Fields and all the hype. But while you're caught up in that, while you sit there and ooh and ah at Fields in these videos, realize that the team around him is literally crumbling. I love the videos I've seen from Fields. Love the throws, the accuracy, running. Great stuff. Obviously has talent. But while we all sit here and focus on those, remember in the background, all this stuff going on. You've got no line depleted. You've got Tevin Jenkins, your second-round pick, possibly having season-ending surgery. Goldman, Komet, hurt. Fields himself, groin injury. Remember all this stuff. Recognize it. Stop saying, hey, we fixed the quarterback position. Because in reality, that isn't the case. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Mark Schanowski comes up next, so stay tuned. Here with John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Bulls insider at Stadium, sports reporter at ABC 7, and the host of the Gimme the Hot Sauce podcast with Stacey King. Please welcome Mark Schanowski to the program. Mark, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Nice to be back, John. Obviously, it's a very exciting time for Bulls fans. You know, this is going to be very strange where the season's going to turn around very quickly. And before you know it, the Bulls are going to be in training camp in late September. And I know this is the first season in a long time. There's going to be a genuine buzz at the start of training camp.
What's your evaluation of all their offseason moves?
I think they really improved offensively. You bring in a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who's really kind of developed his game over time. When he came into the league out of USC, he was a high flyer. You'd always see him on the highlight shows dunking over the top of people. And then he developed into a solid mid-range scorer, averaged as much as 27 points in one season. And, you know, he's been very consistent throughout his NBA career. But last year with the Spurs, they had a very young team, and Greg Popovich asked him to take on more of a facilitator role. He played small forward. He even played some power forward in small ball lineups. And Pop asked him to, you know, make sure that he would have the ball in his hands and he would distribute it to some of their younger guys and some of their outside shooters. He averaged a career-high 6.9 assists last year, still averaged 21.5 points per game. Just turned 32 last week, so by no means is he over the hill. I know some people have wondered about whether or not the Bulls overpaid to bring him in, but that's the price of doing business in free agency. The Bulls have not had a good record over the last 4 years, and if you want to bring in a multiple-time All-Star, you're going to have to maybe overpay a little bit to get him to jump on and then take a leap of faith with you.
Did you like the aggressiveness from Karnišević? I mean, this is much different from what the Bulls have done recently in free agency. Did this send a message?
Yeah, you know, people kind of forget when John Paxson came in back in 2003, he did the same thing. He basically unloaded everybody on the roster, with the exception of the two teenage big men, Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry. So it's not unusual for a general manager to come in and take a look at the roster and go, you know what, I can't win with these guys. I have no allegiance to these guys. I'm going to make changes and try to build a team that kind of fits my vision of how we're going to play basketball. And I think AK was given that kind of latitude by Michael and Jerry Reinsdorf when he came in. I don't think he would have taken the job if they would have said, listen, you can come in, but we want to keep these six or seven players. We want to keep this assistant coach. I think that he was given free rein to make whatever changes he saw fit. And boy, has he turned it over in just over a year's time.
So how far could the Bulls go next year?
I think that it just depends on how quickly the team chemistry comes along and if they can hold up on the defensive end. As I mentioned, DeMar DeRozan will be the starting small forward. He's never been what you'd call a defensive stopper, and there's so many good elite threes in the league that I think that you know, teams will go at him defensively. Patrick Williams will move over to the four. We've seen him play some in summer league where it looks like he's put on a little strength, maybe a little bit added weight in anticipation of that. And I think that he'll hold up pretty well defensively at the four. They're not going to look for him to do a lot on the offensive end. He's going to be more of a guy that gets his points off the offensive glass and on fast breaks. But I think that this is a team that if it comes together quickly, they could be in that 4-6 range in the Eastern Conference. If it takes a little while for chemistry to develop, well, then you're looking at 7-8. And I know that people don't want to hear that after all the money that's been spent and all the draft picks that have been sent to other teams. But the East is a lot stronger now. I would say from top to bottom, the East is stronger than the West, which we haven't said in probably in about 20 years. So it's going to be I think the Bulls will make the playoffs. I don't want to set off alarm bells with all your listeners, but I don't think it's going to be an automatic jump into the top four in the East, because you look at Milwaukee, who won the championship, Brooklyn, who's going to get all their stars back and made some nice, along the margins moves in free agency. And you've also got the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers. So I think those are your top four teams in the East. And then we'll see if the Bulls, if it all comes together, maybe they're in the running for five.
Is that an issue, considering they spent all this money and made big moves this offseason to only get to five, possibly?
Well, I think it's one of those situations where you generally have to walk before you can run. We did see with the Phoenix Suns making a huge jump last year, getting all the way to the finals, basically with the addition of Chris Paul, getting that veteran leader who could kind of keep them structured to get them good shots in their half-court sets. And they went from a team that missed the playoffs the previous season to having the second-best record in the West and then going all the way to the finals. So it can be done. And who knows, maybe the Bulls will surprise us and make a Phoenix Suns-type leap. We don't know what's going to happen with the 76ers. I mentioned them as likely in the top four because they had the best record in the East a year ago. But they may trade Ben Simmons either before training camp starts or before the trade deadline, and then that could be a team that will have a vastly different look, and maybe they would drop into that second four rather than one of the teams that has home court advantage. So I don't want to say that it's impossible for the Bulls to move into the top four. It's just that there are some good teams with experience in front of them, and they're going to have to play their best basketball to jump into that category.
You know, when we talked last time, we talked about how there's not a lot of time left for this team. Zach LaVine's contract's coming up. Vucevic's is coming up as well. Do you think that played a role in them going out and getting DeRozan and Ball and making all these moves?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. Arturas promised ownership that he would try to turn this around as quickly as possible, but he's also looking at the future and the fact that Zach LaVine is going to be an unrestricted free agent next summer, coming off his best season as a pro, making the All-Star team, being a part of the gold medal winning Olympic team, shooting 50, 40, 85 from the field, the three-point line, and the free throw line. I mean, he was incredibly efficient. People had always said that a lot of Zach's points were from high-volume usage. That wasn't the case a year ago. You know, he was a top 10 scorer in the league with a very efficient shooting percentage. So I think that Zach is playing his best basketball. Greg Popovich was using him as a defender, as a guy who would pressure opposing point guards in the Olympics. I think he learned a lot from that experience that he can bring back to Chicago. And, you know, everyone knows the story. Zach has never been part of a team with a winning record, a team that made the playoffs, and that's something he desperately wants. I think that Arturas is looking at this long view, and he felt like, you know, Zach is going to be in line for a max contract next summer, and he wants to make sure that this team is attractive for Zach to stay. We saw all the shots of Zach becoming pretty good friends with Kevin Durant during the Olympic run, and we don't want to see Zach try to jump to another super team when the season's over.
Do you think they get a contract done?
No, well, what they had that window with possibly using cap space to try to extend him this summer, and instead they used that money to make the improvements to the roster. So I'm sure that, you know, they got together with Zach and his agent and said, well, we're not going to have the money available to extend you this year, but as soon as we get to July 1 of 2022, we'll have that max contract offer on the table for you. I don't see any scenario, barring injury, where Zach doesn't get a max contract next summer, and I think the Bulls will be happy to give it to him, assuming that everything goes along course, that he doesn't have a serious injury, and that they take that next step and get into the playoffs next year.
Mark Schanowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, which move this offseason would you say is the most impactful?
I think that the Lonzo Ball move is probably the most impactful, because we've been talking about it for the last couple of years that they needed someone who could run the offense, who could make sure they get good shots, who can be a defensive stalwart on-ball defender. You know, one of the big weaknesses the Bulls had last year was so many times in the high screen and roll, which every team runs, their guards were unable to stay in front of opposing teams' guards, and it led to just basically two-on-one fast breaks to the rim all the time with their big man and drop coverage, and that just didn't work. They have to get better defense at the point of attack, and I think that Lonzo Ball will provide that. At 6'5", 6'6", a rangy defender, he can slow down opposing point guards, and then he's made incredible improvements in his shooting form in his 4 years in the league. Last year, he shot 38% from the three-point range. He was over 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. And I think the ball is going to be in Zach's hands and DeMar DeRozan's hands a lot. They're going to ask in half-court sets for Lonzo to spot up in the corners and knock down open threes. If you look at his numbers last year, he shot those at a very high volume, and he was very efficient. So I think he's going to fit in well in the offense that Billy Donovan wants to run. And I think that his addition on the defensive end is really going to help them, along with Patrick Williams. And they also picked up Alex Caruso from the Lakers, who, in by all metrics, is one of the better on-ball defenders among all backcourt players in the league. So Arturas didn't just load up with offense. He also had defense in mind in bringing some of these guys in. He also added a shot-blocking backup center in Tony Bradley for the veterans minimum, which isn't going to get a lot of attention, but he's a guy that can come in, protect the rim, block some shots, which, as we know, is not the strong point for Nikola Vucevic.
Does that mean Kobe White's coming off the bench this year?
I don't think there's any question Kobe White's coming off the bench, and he may miss the first month of the season as he rehabs from that shoulder surgery. In past cases where people have had surgery to repair a torn labrum, the rehab period's anywhere from 4 to 6 months. 4 months would get him there for training camp. 6 months would mean he'd miss the first month of the season. So we know Kobe is young, and he's a hard worker, and he's going to work as hard as he can to get back as soon as he can. But with the drafting of Ayo Dosunmu and the addition of Caruso, if Kobe misses a couple of weeks at the start of the year or even the first month of the season, they can kind of work him in slowly. But, you know, in his first couple of seasons in the league, I know the coaches that he had, whether it was Jim Boylan or Billy Donovan, were hoping that he would make some growth in his ability to be a lead guard to facilitate half-court offense. I think they've basically thrown that out the window now and said, you know what, you can be our Jamal Crawford, our Lou Williams, just come in and light it up offensively. And I think that's an avenue where Kobe can really excel. Hopefully there's acceptance on his part because, as you know, with these rookie contracts, after 3 years, you're eligible for an extension, and after 4 years, you can become a restricted free agent. So the clock's always ticking on these guys. They kind of have to find out this year where he fits with this team and how much they're willing to pay him for that role going forward.
Where do you think he fits in? What's his career look like long term?
It just depends on how he develops other aspects of his game. We've seen at times that because of his elite speed, he can be a great defender off the ball in terms of playing passing lanes and getting steals. But he has not been at this point at 6'4", 6'5". We would think that he'd be able to be a guy who could pressure an opposing point guard full court and really be kind of a lockdown defender. He's not shown that through his first two seasons in the NBA. And he hasn't been the greatest in terms of his assist-to-turnover ratio. We'd like to see him be better in half-court sets and making sure that he can protect the ball. Coming off the bench, I don't think he's going to be asked to do a lot of those things. I think that they're going to say, we want you to run the court, we want you to be instant offense, and we want you to knock down three-point shots. For Kobe and his representatives, they're going to have to decide, is that enough? You know, he's only 20, 21 years old. I think he sees himself as a starting point guard in the league. There may come a point where he'll go to Bulls management and say either, you know, is there a possibility of moving me to another team where I can start, or maybe let me go to another team in free agency where I can be a starter. Those are all questions for down the road. For now, I think that certainly for this season, he will be very accepting of his role as an off-the-bench scorer, and we'll see where that leads and what kind of team success the Bulls have.
Is Lauri Markkanen going to be on this team next year?
I really doubt it. I think right now that the front office is shopping around the league trying to get one of those first-round draft picks that they gave up back. You know, they traded a couple of first-round draft picks for Vucevic. They included a first-round draft pick in the sign-and-trade for DeRozan. So they're really light on draft capital right now. And as we all also know, there's that threat of this NBA investigation looming over the Bulls for possible tampering in the Lonzo Ball sign-and-trade negotiations, which was announced at 5:01, you know, 1 minute after free agency was just supposed to start where you could talk to guys. You know, I don't know why they announced that. I mean, it just, from a business perspective, just wait at least a couple of hours to give at least the appearance of following the rules. I think the Bulls made a mistake in that. It may have been leaked by some source outside of the Bulls organization, but the fact that, you know, both ESPN and NBA TV on their free agency shows reported it immediately after signing on was not a good look for the Bulls or the NBA. You know, it was a complicated sign and trade involving draft picks, involving Garrett Temple getting a new deal with the Pelicans. You can't get that all done in 30 seconds. So I think the Bulls messed that up. I think there's penalties coming. It's just a question of how severe it's going to be. Remember, Milwaukee got docked a second-round draft pick for what was found to be tampering in their attempts to work out a sign-and-trade for Bogdan Bogdanovic, and they didn't get Bogdanovic, so the league kind of just gave him a slap on the wrist with a second-round draft pick. In this instance, you know, the Bulls and the Pelicans completed that sign-and-trade transaction. A lot of people are afraid they're going to come after him with a heavy fine and maybe want a first-round draft pick back. And that would be a heavy price to pay when, if they had just waited a few hours or even waited a couple of days to announce it, they'd have been in the clear.
Let me ask you this, though, Mark. Are the Bulls the only team, really, at Tampa? I mean, it's hard for me to believe they're the only team that does this stuff. I assume it's because they got caught, and that's why they're in this pickle.
Well, we've been seeing it for decades where teams have been,
right,
before the free agent negotiating period is open, teams have had deals in place. But the league just doesn't like the optics of a complicated sign and trade transaction being announced at 5:01. It just didn't look good. You know, a lot of free agent signings in the past have been announced right at the start of free agency. But in that instance, it was just the league kind of looked the other way when a team would talk to a player agent and get a deal worked out, and then they'd announce it immediately. They kind of felt like, well, you know, they're just trying to cut off competition for other teams in the league. And even though it was a violation of the tampering rules, you know, they didn't really look at it as something that they were going to pounce on. But in this instance, you know, there were a lot of moving parts, and to get all that done would have been impossible without violating the league rules.
Mark Schanowski here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, how about Denzel Valentine and Cristiano Felicio? What's your reaction to them being gone?
Well, I wish them well. They just are not NBA players, plain and simple. Felicio, God bless him, got a wonderful contract from Gar Forman. Gar thought that he was a guy that they could develop. From the moment I saw him during his first training camp, he looked awkward and a guy that didn't fit. As a pro basketball player, I mean, he's a kid who grew up in Brazil playing soccer, didn't have a long track record of playing basketball. Very nice kid, a hard worker, but to me, he was never an NBA player. And I think that was a misevaluation by the previous front office. They, you know, that was another one that was announced in the first hour of free agency. They wanted to make sure that no one stole Felicio away from him. So they overpaid to keep him. And, you know, they basically had to keep him on the end of the bench for 4 years just to pay off that contract, which I'm sure, you know, the Reinsdorfs weren't especially happy about. And with Denzel, you know, at times he flashed, you know, he could shoot the three-pointer. He's a very adept passer. He was an excellent college player at Michigan State, but he doesn't have the athletic skills to be a standout player in the NBA. He has not signed yet with another team. I don't know if he'll catch on, you know, at the back end of somebody's bench. I mean, obviously he could be a guy that you could use as a guard against injuries at your two and three spots, but you know, he just doesn't have the elite athletic skills that you need to be an NBA rotation player and a very productive one.
When did you know his Bulls tenure would be over?
Valentine?
Yes.
Well, I think that when he finally got a chance in his third season, you know, he had injuries, he had ankle problems his first couple of years. He missed most of his second season in the league. And when he came back and finally got some consistent run, you know, you could see that he could shoot the three ball and he was a smart passer, but he just couldn't hold up defensively because he wasn't quick enough. You know, there's a lot of guys like that in the league who have one skill that kind of keeps them around, but not someone that you can rely on to be a well-rounded player. He could catch on with another team, as I mentioned. He does have two NBA skills. He can shoot the three and he's a good passer, but I think the fact that he's a liability on defense and is not a great athlete, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be sought after for a rotation role, I think, by league teams.
So, Mark, with all of this said, then, how would you grade Karnišević's offseason?
I give him an A, no question about it. The only negative that I would have is the draft capital they gave up in the San Antonio deal. You know, that was a one and two twos, and that's a lot. And if they do lose more picks in this tampering investigation, they're not going to have any draft picks. You know, they for now they have their number one pick next summer, 2022. But then 2023, the pick goes to Orlando in the Vucevic deal. 2025, first rounder goes to San Antonio. There are other second round picks that are going out for other transactions. They're not going to have any draft picks, and that is always the lifeblood of a professional sports organization. So that concerns me a little bit. But in terms of bringing in exactly the type of point guard you needed in Lonzo Ball, a guy who is willing, is a pass-first guy who will get the ball to your three 20-point-per-game scorers in the lineup. That was a perfect addition. Caruso was a pest defensively, who's going to be a good complement to Kobe White in your reserve backcourt. And I think DeRozan fits a need at the small forward position, a guy who's really changed his game over the years to be more of a facilitator, who can score from the mid-range, who can get to the free throw line. I believe he ranked eighth in the league in free throw attempts last year at just over seven per game, which is another weakness the Bulls had, was drawing fouls. So that's another area where he shores up. And then they mentioned getting Tony Bradley as a shot-blocking rim protector, and I think they've got one more move left where they'll probably bring in a veteran power forward to back up Patrick Williams. So I would say, you know, all around, I'd give him an A, and they also got Io DeSumo in the second round, who I think this year will spend a lot of time with the Windy City Bulls trying to develop his skills, but ultimately a guy at 6'5", who can play both guard spots, who could be a really useful player down the road.
More to come with Mark Schanowski in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Mark Schanowski, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, how was the celebration in Milwaukee?
I'll tell you what, that was fantastic. You know, I was in eighth grade when they won the championship in 1971, and I remember that fondly. with Kareem and Oscar Robertson and Bobby Dandridge. And it was just, that was, you know, for a kid in grade school to be able to enjoy that was an incredible thrill. And I joke with one of my old buddies that maybe we're only going to get one Bucks championship in our lifetime. But, you know, things kind of broke their way with Harden getting hurt in the first game of the Eastern Conference semifinals, and then Kyrie going out, and they were just barely able to get past Brooklyn by the length of the tip of Kevin Durant's shoe to get through to the conference finals. And then Giannis had that scary-looking injury against Atlanta, and I thought he was done for the playoffs and maybe for a year with an ACL tear. But, you know, unbelievably, he came back for the start of the finals. He was a little bit tentative in game one, but then he just completely dominated that series. And, John, I would tell you that that performance that he had in game seven, scoring 50 points and making 17 of 19 free throws when he's, you know, a shaky free throw shooter at best, that ranks with one of the best final clinching victory performances in the history of the league. That was amazing. And then, you know, Giannis has always had his yeah, but detractors. You know, the two MVPs, he scores a lot of points, yeah, but he can't get it done in the playoffs. Nobody's saying that anymore. And I know that, you know, my family and friends that still live in the Milwaukee area, my daughter works up there with Spectrum News. She was right in the middle of all that stuff. I got a chance to go up there and experience that as well. It was thrilling to see that for the city of Milwaukee, and who knows, maybe the Brewers will give him a 2021 double, which would be pretty incredible.
And Mark, before we finish up today, last question: what's been a top highlight from Give Me the Hot Sauce recently?
You know, I think the best parts of the show really are when Stacey kind of riffs on his childhood growing up in Oklahoma and his days as a college student. And, you know, we get his old teammates on and they tell war stories about Phil Jackson and, you know, how he and BJ were treated as rookies. You know, some of the he said it wasn't very terrible hazing, but there were a lot of things that they had to do as rookies on that elite championship squad. It's always fun to get one of his old teammates on and have them tell stories. You know, Stacy's an entertainer. You know, he used to imitate Bill Cartwright, and Cartwright hated that. You know, he used to threaten to kill Stacy all the time. He said, you know, you imitate me one more time, I'm going to strangle you. And but Stacy kept doing it. And we in the media loved Stacy as a player because he had that great sense of humor and the quick wit. And he was, even though he was a reserve, he was a sought-after interview because he was always so funny and so open and engaging. So, you know, it's always funny to go back and hear stories about a young Stacy King almost going to Maryland, and he was all set to go there, and then the girl he was dating at the time decided she didn't want to go, so that was the reason he went to Oklahoma. So these are the things that changes the course of people's lives, and, you know, he could have gone to Maryland and played because he was a big fan of the great Len Bias, and he wanted to follow in those footsteps, but instead he stayed close to home and went to Oklahoma, and that kind of changed the course of his life, and wound up being a part of three championship Bulls teams and now being one of the most popular broadcasters in the league. So as we all know in our lives, that one event can just spark a flash where everything changes for you. And it's been fun getting to really know Stacy and some of his old friends around the league and just them having them sharing those experiences. I know that people who are regular listeners of Give Me the Hot Sauce enjoy Stacy kind of taking them behind the curtain, and we promise that we'll continue to deliver on that in the future.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate talking Bulls with you, and best wishes as the season comes up and on the podcast as well. You guys are on YouTube, too. You do great work. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. I always enjoy talking with you. Continued success with the show, and now we got Bears season coming up, and I know people are excited about Justin Fields. It's a good time in Chicago sports, and I'm very happy that the Bulls are now, again, one of those teams that Chicago sports fans are excited about.
Great talk there with Mark Chenowski, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Mark Chenowski himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zaglua. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?